Good afternoon and welcome to Game Day. I am Matt Teague here with Austin Owens and our producer David Morisuti. Lots of stuff to talk about today. The Maple Leafs rookie tournament just wrapped up last weekend, and we're heading into the official training camp here in September. 73 players invited out. A few of the very notable ones. We got Travis Dermott and Liljegren from the rookie tournament last week, getting another chance, taking that next step and joining the big boys for training camp in September. So the Leafs are going to have a lot of decisions to make. We're going to talk about what players we think have a chance, what players maybe will need a little bit more time, and just generally what we think about the upcoming NHL season, boys. We covered the tournament last weekend. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so they've shaved the roster down, and who are a couple guys that you thought really stood out last weekend?
One of the guys that I thought was coming into the tournament that really didn't have a lot of buzz. I mean, you have the big names. You got Brocco, you've got Brooks, Dermott, Liljegren. Mason Marchment was somebody that was a guy that stepped up for me. I was able to go watch the first game against Montreal. And he was hard in on the puck. I mean, you talk about sort of that classic player that likes to get in and bang bodies and just plays that physical style. He got a couple of points during the tournament. And he's not, like I said, he's not afraid to get in there and just mix it up. So I think that's a player that Sheldon Keefe will really like. He played sort of a mix of the ECHL and AHL last year with the Orlando Solar Bears. So I think you'll see him a lot more in the lineup. He's a guy that I think will fit well into the system.
Yeah, nice 6'4" body. Could use a little bit more of that size and skill set combination with, you know, the Leafs have so many highly touted prospects, but a lot of them are, and this is okay as we're learning, the NHL is shifting sort of a new era where, you know, size does not matter as much as it used to based on everyone's speed and, the new skill sets that everyone is sort of developed over the last decade or so. Marchman would be a huge addition because, you know, you see guys like Jeremy Bracco, Adam Brooks, all these guys that are just a tad around 6 feet, just under. So it'd be nice to get some size as well. So.
Yeah, for sure. You see him on the Leafs roster. You see guys like you see a guy like Matt Martin. I mean, for whatever he does, he still is that physical presence. It's nice when you can also get production out of him. I mean, Marchman showed that he's not just a guy that goes and hits people. He can also get in on the cycle and produce offensively. So I think that's important. And I mean, the day before the tournament started, he took a puck to the face in practice. He had a big gash underneath his right eye, I believe it was. So. Nails. I mean, what more do you have to say about a guy? I mean, the Leafs fans will love him if you ever get to see him, even with the Marlies.
Yeah. No, my guy is not even, he's not even a guy with size. It's a guy who actually, with one of the smaller guys, Martin Zirkles, the Latvian player who played in the QMJHL last year. One thing I noticed about him was, yeah, he's a small player, but he makes people miss him. You know, he had a really nice toe drag move in the first game when I was there with Austin. Things like that you notice when a guy is poised with the puck. His shot is very underrated. One thing I noticed with the players, especially on the offensive side, was the lack of players wanting to shoot and take shots on net. A lot of guys were looking to make the pass first or just make the perfect play. He was the guy that was trying to get the pucks more on net. He did score a goal, which, you know, you want to see if a guy's putting out a lot of shots on that, eventually you want to see him get it in the net. But no, he stood out for me, and he's a guy that, you know, he had an off year with injuries in juniors, and he's now looking to make the move over to the Toronto Marlies since he is an older player. So he's a guy that, you know, the Leafs, especially because he's a left shot, the Leafs don't have a lot of depth on the left wing. It's a lot on the right side, so he's a guy that can easily make an impact if he can step into the Marlies lineup right away.
He's another guy like Marchman. I mean, he signed his AHL deal probably, I think it was about a month and a half ago with the Marlies. He's another guy that's sort of on the outside of the lineup, but I mean, I think he said post-game that he was dealing with an injury to both his ankles at points during the season, and hockey's a game where you need like your legs and everything to be perfect. You can't be going around on sideboards of the trying to skate on your edges with bad ankles. That's just not going to happen. And it's a big part of his game, like you said, Dave. He makes people miss. He's very good on the power play. I just got the chance to watch some tape of him, and he has this little in and out move where he'll fake like he's going and then just split to the outside. he's made guys miss in the QMJHL with that for 2 years now, and that's something he's very good at. So he's sneaky agile, and he's got the speed to really make a difference in the pro game, I think.
Yeah, someone else, and this is no hot take at all, obviously, Leaf fans have known about this prospect for quite some times with the World Junior tournaments happening and everything like that, but Jeremy Bracco, on the ice, unbelievable. The speed and the skill and the awareness that he has on the ice, that he possesses, but off the ice as well. And I don't know if this is maybe also just an effect that the World Juniors have had on him, and you know, U.S. development camps, and he's been in the limelight for quite some time. But the composure off the ice in the scrum, the way he was speaking with people and addressing media members, it's pretty similar with Travis Dermott, actually, and another guy who for Canada, obviously not the States, but represented Canada at the World Juniors. And these players, this extra experience and exposure that they've received for the last few years really seems to help a lot of them feel more comfortable around the media. I mean, Bracco seems like a professional already. When do you guys think, for players like Bracco and Dermott, when do you think their time might come? Because, I mean, it's hard to keep a guy as skilled as Bracco, especially, out of the lineup. But with the Leafs' depth on forward, it's difficult. So,
well, a good thing with Bracco is, you know, he's not like some of the other players where, you know, he spent his time in the juniors. He did his time there. But you look at the lineup right now for the Leafs. You have on the right side, you have Mitch Marner, you have William Nylander, Connor Brown. The fourth line winger is open. They're saying Kasperi Kapanen is a guy that could step in there. They've got a lot of options there.
Levo or Soshnikov as well.
That too. For Bracco, I mean, the Leafs would rather have him develop in the Marlies, playing top line minutes, worrying about both sides of the game, rather than playing, what, 7, 8, 9 minutes on the fourth line. And as you said, Matt, his skating has come a long way. Obviously, trying to get him to maybe shoot the puck more. He had a wicked wrist shot in the first game. We got tipped by Grundstrom, but for a goal. But he has the offensive tools. Can he do enough to make the Leafs in the future? I think it depends on what they do with Tyler Bozak. Do they move Nylander to center? Obviously, if they do that, that's your spot right there for a guy like Bracco. Do you maybe consider having him play on the offside? Because he is a guy that likes to, you know, skate around. His edges are very good, so he's not comfortable just being on one side. He likes to use as much of the zone as possible. So I think it depends on what he does with the Marlins. If they play him strictly on the right side, it's going to have to be a wait and see. The left wing position, you know, you have Patrick Marleau, who's locked in here pretty much for 3 years. Mm-hmm. JVR, or James Van Riemsdyk, is done after this season. Many are not expecting him to be back, considering he's a UFA. You have Leo Komarov. Again, his future is questionable. And then you have Matt Martin. So unless the Leafs are willing to move some of these guys to the off wing, they're going to have to wait for an opportunity to open up, because that right side is, as we said, is very loaded right now. And then if you're looking at a guy like Dermott, he's a guy that can step in right now. Because you look at this Leafs defense, and I guess we'll talk about this more later, but that defense needs young talent and mobility. And he's a guy that has impressed management enough, especially with what he did in the Marlies in his first pro season of hockey. They really like what he's done there. You know, there's been a lot of people who have seen him play that have said this guy is ready for the NHL now. Yeah. And it'd be very tough to not see him win the battle out of the camp, because if you look at who's there, other than the two Swedish players in Borgman and Rosen, I don't know if there's a player that can bring what Dermott has on that third pairing.
Yeah, I think it's really important for the Leafs to try some of these guys out at the big league level. You know, obviously, you want to keep the defense as strong as it can be game to game, but, I mean, is it really that big a deal dropping out, other than in terms of handiness and all that not playing a factor, but is it really a huge deal to drop out a guy like Connor Carrick for Dermott for a game to see what he can do, or put a little grin in there? Because we've had defensemen in the past, guys like TJ Brennan, they've never really got a chance to get up into the big NHL level, and it's like you don't want to see some of these guys' opportunities come by the wayside, and for Leaf fans not to really see their full potential.
I think think you're really seeing the Leafs. Their system, I would say, over the last couple drafts has been revamped. You'll see, I mean, I'd say personally 2015 was their best draft that I've ever seen. Hot take or not, take it as you will. I mean, past Mitch Marner, you get Travis Dermott and Bracco in the second round, who we've talked about. They passed up a first-rounder. These are all guys that have featured at the rookie tournament, too. You have a guy like Nikita Khorostalev, who was taken in the seventh round. You've got Dmitry Timoshov, who was in the fifth. Andrew Nielsen in the fourth. You also have Zirkles. I mean, the Leafs system, you're seeing that 2015 draft now come up into the minors, and they're the guys that featured predominantly at the rookie tournament. Carl Grundstrom's another guy. I mean, he's going to be very good. He looked solid in that entire tournament. He had a great two-way game. He's a guy that's really been talked about as a guy who can play defense and also score goals, so he's going to be interesting going forward. He also has that thing. He's going to end up back in Sweden if he doesn't make the Leafs. More than likely, he doesn't make it, as we've talked about earlier. So he's a guy that I really liked during that tournament.
Right on. Yeah, so there's so much to talk about the Leafs. We're lucky, unlike years past, a lot of positives to talk about. And we will be back with more discussion after this break and sports update from David Morisuti.
Thanks, Matt. The Indianapolis Colts are making a change at quarterback. According to the NFL Network, Jacoby Brissett will get the start on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals, replacing Scott Tolzien, who made the start in the season opening dismantling by the LA Rams. Victor Butler and Cleon Lang will be back for the Argos on Saturday when they welcome the Edmonton Eskimos at BMO Field, but they will be without star defender Sean Lemon, who is placed on the six-game injured list on Friday. Colorado Avalanche forward Matt Duchene reported to camp despite rumors suggesting that he was unhappy with the way management handled his trade rumors. The stadium saga in Calgary continues as reports suggest that council is willing to pay for a third of the new arena. Ken King, though, says that negotiations have been unsuccessful. Now back to game day on Centennial Radio.
Here to game day. We are here to talk more sports and more hockey right now. Touched on a little bit of the Leafs rookies from camp a week ago. Now we're going to move more into the big boys and talk about some of the bigger names, what we think about the upcoming season and about training camp right now, some of the exhibition games coming up, who's going to make the final roster, who's not. How are last year's players going to fare in their sophomore season, particularly, sorry, the rookies, how are they going to fare in their sophomore season? Lots to talk about. So, guys, you know, we've heard of this sophomore slump before in sports, across all sports, and whether it's truly just a matter of it's your second year, people have figured you out a bit, you know, all the magic of your rookie years rubbed off, and it's sort of just more of a grind, or if it's just a coincidence. It's one or the other. We've seen examples before, you know, guys like Sean Monahan,
Max Domi, sure. Duclair. Those Arizona guys have some trouble.
Yeah.
Especially last year. That was a down year for them.
Yeah, we've seen some players that we were pretty shocked to see drop off in production. And, you know, the Leafs obviously had one of the best rookie units last year in the history of the league, really. And so there's a lot of potential for that to happen with some of the players this year. What do you guys think about the sophomore slump? And do you think it's going to be affect the Leafs? Or
as it pertains to the Leafs, I don't believe the sophomore slump will affect it.
Okay.
In terms of Matthews, I mean, teams are going to game plan for him. Teams were game planning for him last year when he was the supposed third-line center, air quote, third-line center. But he and Nylander together, I mean, you can only hold those two down for so long, especially with Zach Hyman chasing down pucks, presumably from what I've been reading, Zach Hyman's going to be with them again, if not Patrick Marleau, which adds another aspect to how you have to shut that line down. And Mitch Marner, I mean, he's really creative with the puck. So I don't think you can really expect those. I mean, you can expect a drop-off for sure, just because everyone sort of figured them out now. They've been watching tape on them for months. But it's not going to be a 30-point drop-off for them. It's going to be maybe 5 to 10 points, mm-hmm. if that. They could go up even. I think with Matthews and Nylander, I mean, Nylander's only going to score more goals with Matthews, and Matthews is going to put up the exact same numbers, I would say, as last year.
Yeah, I think the Leafs management is just so stable, and that's what keeps, I think, fans somewhat comfortable. I can't see Mike Babcock and Lou Lamoriello. I feel like they have a plan firmly in place, just as they did when the boys were rookies. You know, things like no interviews during the games for the rookies. Obviously, that's not going to be a rule anymore, but I feel like they have a plan in place to keep guys protected, to keep guys motivated, and to keep guys on track. And there's so many of them, like you said, it's going to be so hard. I mean, in Arizona, as we mentioned, Max Domi and Duclair slumping a little bit. But I mean, there's no one else surrounding them that is as skilled as some of the talent that is on the Leafs. So yeah. I think, like you said, you can't hold them all down. There's just so many of them, even like the Connor Browns and the Zach Hymans.
That's what I was just going to mention.
Yeah, there's so many of them. And like I said, I think the Leafs management just, they know this is coming. They know it's a thing, and I think they have the proper plans in place. And like, if, for example, if Mike Babcock's behind the bench for Dylan Larkin again last year, if he's still in Detroit, does Larkin have a down season? I don't know for sure, but right, having Mike Babcock there, knowing that your coach believes in you, no matter if you've scored in the last 10 games or how you're playing, every day you're going to get to the rink, it's going to be the same philosophy. And the Leafs just love playing together.
Yeah.
They're having so much fun out there.
But the one guy I think that's really going to benefit this year is Nikita Zaitsev. Mm-hmm. It's somebody we don't really consider to be a sophomore because he played his first season in 24 last year. Connor Brown's another guy I wanted to touch on because Marleau, I think, is going to be a huge help to him, considering I think I've been seeing that Komarov is supposed to be dropping down the line, and there might be running Brown, Kadri, and Marleau together, which would be huge for him because Kadri, a 30-goal scorer, Marleau is a consistent scorer every year, at least 20 goals most of the time. But Zaitsev, I think, the consensus is he's either going to be playing with Morgan Rielly or Connor Brown. I mean, his shooting percentage wasn't great last year. He didn't have his first goal up until around Christmas time. So he's a guy that can rush the puck up the ice. He's a very good offensive defenseman when he wants to be, and he can also play the two-way game. Mm-hmm. So I think his production is going to go up for sure. He had a lot of assists. He got to play power play. I think that'll really help him, more power play time. And he's got a huge shot. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to think he's not going to put up more goals, at least. If the assists stay the same, that's fine. But he's going to score more this year, I'd say.
You see the guys they brought in this offseason. You have Ron Hainsey, Patrick Marleau, and Dominic Moore.
And Roman Polak again.
And Roman Polak is presumably coming back. He's coming on a tryout.
Maybe.
But
round three or four.
We'll see what happens with that. But those are three vets that have a good track record going into this locker room, and that's why they brought them in, not just because of what they do on the ice, but what they do off the ice. Mm-hmm. That was, I wouldn't say it was missing last season, but it's definitely going to be a bonus because it's not like it's going to be a drawback having those guys in the lineup or even in the locker room. So I think having them will push the rookies to do more. You look at other examples that we were talking about, I don't think those players had the support, those rookies had the support that what the Leafs rookies have. As you guys mentioned, mm-hmm. Babcock is the obvious one. Then you have your veterans. I know everyone's talking about the whole captain thing, which I don't think is relevant yet because you just have a good group. You have a good locker room. Your management is your leadership group. That's what it is.
It's
so
smart not to put the C on somebody right now. It's honestly, you're still getting used to the system. As much as that sounds like just a cop-out for why Babcock is a good coach, and that's because he runs a complicated system or a system that works and that he can win with. I mean, they're going to be more comfortable in that system, and I think learning everything and just getting into the league. You could slap the C on Austin Matthews, which is probably the consensus, I would think, maybe Morgan Riley as a long shot. I once thought Joffrey Lupo was the next captain of the Leafs. Boy, was I wrong. But, I mean, why not give him another year? I mean, there's no rush. Nobody's hollering for a new captain. I mean, the last one we had was run out of town, so... Or the last one that the Leafs had was just Dion Phaneuf. He just, I don't know, never lived up to his potential because they put the C on him too early.
Yep.
I mean, that's a lot of pressure to have on yourself, especially the guys that have come before you.
Yep.
And you don't want to have to be the guy at 19 years old that is the leader of the organization, basically. You're the face.
Mm-hmm.
But Austin Matthews can do it. It's just I think he's another year without the C isn't going to hurt him.
No. And just a last thought on the slumping is – that hockey fans and Leaf fans particularly, they have to be careful in defining what a slump really is. I mean, a lot of these Leafs, Austin Matthews scored 40 goals. If you're sitting on your couch and you're thinking he's going to score closer to 50, you're probably wrong. He's probably, the odds are more likely he'll score closer to 30 goals than he will to 50 goals.
I'd say 30 to 35.
Is that a slump? No. 40 goals in a rookie campaign is completely, it's unbelievable. And there have been five 50-goal seasons since 2011. Three of them belong to Alexander Ovechkin. So if you think he's going to score 50 goals and put up 100 points, you know, it's not happening. So you just kind of have to keep expectations, you know, realistic and just be pragmatic about your approach to the season if you're a Maple Leaf fan.
The only center that posts those kind of numbers is Stamkos, and that's because he posts up the left faceoff circle and just takes those one-timers on every power play. Like, He's got a huge shot. Matthews has a good shot. He doesn't have a Steven Stamkos shot. So he's not – nobody's looking for him to score 40 to 50 goals a year. He's a guy that you want to maybe put up 70 to 80 points a year.
Yeah. If he scores 30 and
– Yeah.
I'm more, 35 assists, I don't think that's a slump.
As a center, I'd like to see him be able to get more assists than goals, honestly. Yeah, I'd like to see him setting up Nylander because if both of them are working as a unit, the Leafs are going to win a lot of games.
I was going to say, that'll come with the proper line mates beside him.
The one guy that's on a show-me year, I think, is Zach Hyman for sure.
Yep.
Let's touch on him real quick. I mean, you talk about Connor Brown. He overshadowed Hyman for sure. Hyman was a big name that a lot of people were excited to see after a good year with the Marlies. 37 points in 59 games for him in the AHL, and then he comes up. Only has 10 goals and 28 points alongside Matthews and Nylander, so definitely a down year for Hyman in his first full NHL season. But, I mean, he's more of the guy that gets them the puck. He should definitely have more assists, especially with Matthews as a 40-goal scorer.
Yeah, and he's a checker. He's a penalty killer. Yep. He's all those things. You know, I mean, the Leafs' penalty kill went from being atrocious for a decade to one of the best in the league, and he had a lot to do with that.
It's like when the first season Leo Komarov came back to Toronto after that that new contract he signed, and he had, what was it, like 15 goals or something like he was just rolling.
Yeah,
I mean, you put a player in that role into a scoring role, I mean, you're going to have a lot of pressure on yourself. And hopefully he bounces back. I'd like to see him succeed because he seems like a really good guy and he loves playing in Toronto. So,
right. Real quick, Timothy Lögren. We've seen him a little bit. He had a couple of tough games. He had a good game in there too. The ice is smaller, obviously, in Sweden. He's putting the puck up the middle a little bit. Seemed like he had a little bit less space with
rough
that skating ability
against Montreal.
Yeah, it's okay. Final, I guess, thoughts on him quickly before we go into the next segment.
I would say he needs to go with the Marlies, learn the Leaf system as soon as possible, and get accustomed to the ice because that kid has talent.
Agreed.
He has talent.
Yep. He is. You just watch him on the power play. If you go back and watch those highlights from the Montreal and Ottawa rookie tournament games, he ran that power play as one of the youngest guys on the ice, if not the youngest.
Yep.
Like, guys want him to have the puck, and he made some absolutely beautiful passes.
Mm-hmm.
That unfortunately didn't go for goals, but you, just as Dave said, you put this guy in the system. Another year in Sweden, he's not going to learn a lot, especially since he's going to be the one guy when he plays for Rögle over in Sweden. He doesn't really have a big defensive core there, so he's going to be relied on a lot. It's going to give him a lot of experience, but then he's going to have to come in and just learn the Leaf system. So I think Marlies are the best option.
I agree. Yeah, that skating ability with that open ice, I'm sure he's so used to so much more space, and he'll just need a little bit of time to adapt that incredible skill set that he has with his feet onto the smaller ice. And, you know, it'll take a little bit of time, but a player like that, I'm sure he'll pull through. Coming up next, we are going to talk a little bit of baseball. Baseball season's wrapping up, but the Blue Jays still have a season to play next year, of course. The Cleveland Indians can't lose, and the Dodgers cannot win, even though they've won a little bit lately.
Dodgers can lose.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about a bunch of that coming up after this break.
Bring your family down to BMO Field on Saturday as the Toronto Argonauts face off against the Edmonton Eskimos. Kickoff is at 4 p.m. and tickets start at $20. You can buy them at argonauts.ca or you can catch the game on TSN or TSN 1050 radio.
The third annual Invictus Games kicks off September 23rd and runs until September 30th in Toronto. The games were created by Prince Harry, and the inaugural Invictus Games took place in London in the fall of 2014 and attracted more than 400 competitors from 13 nations. Invictus Games competitors are the men and women who have come face to face with the reality of making a sacrifice for their country. They are the mothers, fathers, husbands, and wives who have put their lives on the line and have suffered life-changing injuries. The games shine a spotlight on the sacrifices these men and women have made, serving their country, and their unrelenting drive to overcome. You can catch the games at several venues around the city, including the Air Canada Centre, Mattamy Athletic Centre, Distillery District, the Toronto Pan Am Centre, just to name a few. The Invictus Games is about much more than just sport. It captures hearts, challenges minds, and changes lives.
Hockey is back. I'm David Morizuti with the Centennial Sports Update. The Toronto Maple Leafs are off to Niagara Falls as their training camp gets underway. 73 players will take the ice at the Gale Center as they prepare for their first preseason game in Ottawa on Monday. The Centennial Colts men's soccer team moved to 2-0 on the season after beating Fleming College 1-0. Nashawn Campbell got his second goal of the season, and now they will head out west looking to keep their win streak alive against the Durham Lord. The Cleveland Indians make history with their 22nd straight game with the win, hitting a walk-off in extra innings with Jay Bruce hitting an RBI double. They will look to make it 23 straight victories in Cleveland tonight. Now back to game day on Centennial Radio.
Welcome back to Game Day. We've talked hockey for most of the show. We covered the Leafs, rookie camp, training camp, some thoughts on the upcoming season, some sophomore slumps, and now we transition from the pond to the field, and we talk about a little bit of baseball as we approach playoffs, September baseball. The last couple seasons have been a little bit more exciting in the city of Toronto than they are in 2017 currently.
Yeah.
That being said, the Blue Jays, they will have a season to play in 2018. Do not fear, Toronto fans. And we're going to discuss a little bit about what they can do to get themselves back on track and back in playoff contention, as well as talk about teams that can't seem to lose, like the Indians, and teams that have struggled to win, like the Dodgers. So I guess we'll begin with our Toronto Blue Jays.
Yep.
The Toronto Blue Jays and of Toronto. And It's been one of those seasons where we just couldn't hit that 500 mark, and I think even if we did, it probably wouldn't have lasted because we've seen how the season's played out. Many, many injuries. I think 15 different starting pitchers. That might be wrong, 16 maybe at this point, compared to 7 last year. You have Tulowitzki pretty much out for at least half the season. Russ Martin banged up. Devin Sanchez. Travis again. Sanchez literally feels like Sanchez didn't pitch once. I know he
made was it like 36 innings he's pitched this season?
Something like that. I know he's been around, but it just seems like we haven't seen
him. He's definitely been in the dugout. He's just
here. Yeah. You know. But I am personally optimistic about the Toronto Blue Jays. Baseball is one of those funny games where one season is not a big enough sample to tell what direction your team is or should be heading, and I think the Toronto Blue Jays still have an excellent core in place to be competitive in the future. And also, I just think it's the principle, sort of the deductive logic of if you have Josh Donaldson, you must try to compete because he's one of the top five position players, in my personal opinion, in the whole MLB.
There's been a lot of speculation about him being traded, obviously. I'm interested in what you guys think about the team either trading Donaldson or building around Donaldson for the future. Do you think you sign him to that contract and get him locked up for maybe 4 or 5 years, whatever he's looking for? Or do you get rid of him for assets? Are you really full bore into this rebuild? Because I think that's what that says if you're giving away an MVP in Donaldson, a former MVP in Donaldson.
I would like to see them try, personally. I think that we do have enough talent coming up, and the Jays now have proven that they can be a competitive team, and we've seen players a little bit more likely to sign with them. I don't think a player of David Price's caliber, for example, would have signed with the Jays in, say, 2011 or 2012.
Yeah.
So we're able to draw free agents, and if you don't have players like Josh Donaldson in place, no one's going to want to come play for you if you're not at least, you know, showing that you are trying to go in a winning direction. That being said, Donaldson is, I think, 30 years of age. He's obviously had quite a long list of injuries, sort of quietly because he plays through a lot of them, but he's had a fair share of injuries. So I think he'll still be okay at third base for the next 3 or 4 years. And like I said, it's with – another thought I've had a lot of is with Vlad Guerrero Jr. coming up potentially, probably not next season, but maybe by 2019.
Yep.
I fear that we might have another episode here of Carlos Delgado, Roy Halladay, sort of these spectacular superstar players that sort of just, you know,
they have to wait for the next crop to come up and make the team
better. Yeah, and sometimes it never happens. Like it never happened for Delgado or Halladay. Those guys never got to see playoff baseball. They're two of the greatest, two of the top maybe 7 or 8 Jays of all time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think you also didn't really have the talent with them that the Jays had. The Jays never were really regarded as a team that had a top system coming up under J.P. Ricciardi.
No.
So definitely Halladay and Delgado never got that chance, but you also never had a guy like Vlad or a guy like Bichette.
Mm-hmm.
Or some of the guys we've seen. I mean, Urania has been good. Teoscar Hernandez has been very, very solid. Mm-hmm. And the Jays look like they've won that deal as Francisco Liriano's really had a tough time in Houston. So,
yeah, and another thing is pitching is probably the most difficult thing to acquire for a baseball team, especially starting pitching, having good, reliable, young, preferably starting pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
The Blue Jays have these already.
Yeah,
Aaron Sanchez, Marcus Stroman, J-Hop's obviously a little older, but he's been very effective for the Blue Jays in his second tenure. You know, Osuna's a closer for now. The possibilities of him someday being a starter, that's not closed off. He's 21 years old.
Yeah.
You never know. Having those pieces in place and then having pieces throughout the lineup like your Devin Travis, if he can be healthy. There's just so many ifs, of course, but if they all do come into fruition, I think the Blue Jays can be in fine shape. People complain about Troy Tulowitzki's contract. Guess what? Troy Tulowitzki at, you know, his most average self is still better than your
he's still one of the best fielding shortstops in the league.
Exactly. And his bat is still just as good, if not better than most shortstops. There's been a lot, obviously, with guys like Lindor and Corey Seager. There's been a huge sort of outbreak of hitters at the shortstop position. But people just really undermine the value of having someone in that position that can actually hit.
Yeah.
And he's not the old Tulo, but he still can be efficient if healthy. And it's the same argument for Russell Martin. No, his bat's not what it used to be, but, I mean, guess what? How many catchers in the MLB can can be productive for you at the plate. Not very many. So even if he can be average, it's still better than what most teams have in that respective position.
He's going to have a lot of competition over the next coming years. I mean, Rafi Lopez is not going to be the guy. He's a good depth piece. I mean, he's not the solution, but, I mean, you have a guy like Danny Jansen who's really come along. You've heard a lot about him over the last coming months. A lot of people were surprised he didn't come up in September when the roster's expanded. And then you have Reese McGuire, who was the guy that they acquired in the Drew Hutchison and Francisco Liriano deal as an add-on. So, I mean, those two guys are going to be coming up. And from what I've read, actually, both of them are going to be have to be exposed for the Rule 5 draft. So it'll be interesting to see what the Jays do with them, with Martin getting older, and maybe a team takes a flyer on one of them. The Jays have a lot of guys up for the Rule 5 draft. So it'll be interesting to see what their roster looks like in the minors going into the offseason.
For sure. And another thing is the Jays have to look up what they're up against. Obviously, within the AL, it's a tough bet with the Red Sox and the Yankees sort of ascending back into, you know, the juggernaut territory that they've been in for so long. Yep. That we've seen these teams just be the juggernauts of the MLB, and they're getting back there. But in between the Yankees and the Blue Jays, if you look in the standings, I mean, I'm sorry, that those teams are just, they're not that good. They're really not. Even the Twins, who right now possess the second, they have hot bats, but, you know, I'd test any average or baseball fan to name three pitchers on their team. It's tough. They have that Jose Berrios, really good young arm.
They got Big Sexy.
They got Big Sexy. It's just,
it's all that matters.
Like I said, one season of baseball is not enough to tell where the team is trending. And I don't.
Big Sexy and his donkey puncho.
Like the Baltimore Orioles, the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, they're stuck in no man's land. They're kind of not getting any better in the next couple seasons. I think they're only going to get worse until they have to ultimately hit a rebuild. But so I think it's wide open for the Jays to be competitive. There's a lot of teams. Kansas City Royals are another one that they're right there, but if they're not able to make it this year, next year again, they might have to consider tearing it down again, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of wiggle room there for the Jays to compete, and I think it would be a shame when you have a guy like Josh Donaldson, especially on your team, to not, you know, not at least try. So
I mean, the guys, you have Shapiro and Atkins, you got to at least give them a chance. I know they take a lot of flack, but you see the team they've put together now. I mean, 22 straight. That, even in part, is due to them. So let's, what about the Indians?
Yeah, what about the Indians? Another huge win last night. Obviously, Lindor tying it in the ninth with a double, with down to their last strike, last out. Lindor hits a clutch double into the corner, and then in extra innings, immediately, a couple base runners on base with nobody out, Jay Bruce double. It just happened so fast, and they win their 22nd in a row. They've done all of this without Andrew Miller, which is kind of sickening to think about.
And Mike Clevenger's really come through in the clutch. He's been great.
Awesome. They've scored first in almost ever. Did they score first last night?
No. It was either that or the game before. It was the first time they had not scored against the second time they
against
hadn't scored
the Tigers,
first.
They did not score first. They've scored 142 runs, 6.45 per game, and only 1.68 against. That's just a ridiculous spread. Jeez. Seven shutouts in that time. Every other American League team has lost at least eight games in this 22-game winning streak for the Cleveland Indians.
It's just silly.
They have more home runs than runs allowed.
Yeah.
In the this is unprecedented. It's not only just 22 wins in a row. It's 22 games of absolute just baseball
dominance.
Yeah. It's just, they're playing the game the way it should be played in every facet. They're pitching unbelievably. They're hitting the ball. They're hitting home runs. Jay Bruce has been a huge pickup for them.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge. Just bolstering that offense and their outfield depth. And it's just been an incredible run.
Let's touch on the Dodgers real quick. I mean, what was it, 11 straight they had lost?
They lost 10 or 11 straight, 15 of 16. Then they beat the Diamondbacks a couple nights in a row.
They've been snake-bitten with the Diamondbacks.
They have been, and the Rockies a little bit too, which is kind of a interesting.
Two teams that are.
Sets up an interesting premise for the first round of the playoffs, because it will most likely be a battle of the Southwest Division.
I mean, it's cause for concern for some Dodgers fans because you never like to see your team go on a skid like that. It would be a concern for most teams, but this team isn't most teams. They already had 90 wins before they went into this losing streak.
Yes, and baseball, like I've said for the third time now, is a game of probability, and you got to let everything play out, and this amount of time is not a big enough sample size to tell you anything. Honestly, if I'm an Indians fan right now, I'm kind of nervous.
Yeah. Well, you have the Yankees, you have the Red Sox.
Well, I'm just nervous because, I mean, they're a great team, but you also have to have some fortune to win all these games, and especially in baseball, and you don't want to cash all that in now and then find yourself in a rut like the Dodgers are come October. So
for sure.
Yeah. But anyways, that was some excellent baseball chatter. We're obviously really excited for the Blue Jays next season and for October baseball to begin. The Jays won't be there, but you know what? It's going to be amazing. And there's so much parity in that league now. It's really anyone's title.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is it for us this week on Game Day. Thank you for tuning in. I am Matt Teague.
I am Austin Owens.
And I'm David Morisuti.
There you go.
Mr. Producer.
Have an excellent week, everybody, and we will talk to you next week.
The Toronto Observer and the East York Observer are publications run solely by Centennial College journalism students that highlight news from around the city of Toronto, as well as the community of East York. Now the Observer is on YouTube. Check out broadcasts from the students, as well as coverage of the North American Indigenous Games and local stories from Centennial College's sports journalism grads. Hop on the Observer's YouTube page today and get the latest news right away. The future of lacrosse will be on display on Monday night at the 2017 NLL Draft. Catch the draft live at the Toronto Rock Athletic Complex in Oakville or on the NLL's YouTube page.